Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Purusham sattva samyuktam. Anumichyachamadibhi. Kamadibhi rajo yuktam. Kudadyais tamasayutam. Punsam. A person. Sattva sanyuktam. Endowed with the mode of goodness. Anumiyat can be deduced samayadibi by his qualities of sense control and so on. Kamayadibi by lust and so on. Rajyuktam, one who is in the mode of passion. Krudajay, by anger and so on. Tamasa, with the mode of ignorance. Yutam, one who is in doubt. Translation. A person exhibiting qualities such as self-control is understood to be predominantly in the mode of goodness. Similarly, a passionate person is recognized by his lust, and one in ignorance is recognized by qualities such as anger. There is no purport, and a few more verses without purport. To continue reading. One thing to note, though, is that it said a person exhibiting qualities such as self-control is to be predominantly in the mode of goodness, and a passionate person is recognized by his lust. However, when you speak of self-control, it means that lust is still present. A person who is exhibiting qualities such as self-control is internally still affected by lust, but has enough dedication to Dharma that person will control the propensities of lust. In this way, even in the mode of goodness, we can see that the material influence is present. Only when we become transcendental are we becoming free from lust. In the next verse, translation.
Yada bhajatimam bhakcha nirapiksha sokarmavi tam sattva prakritim vidyat purusam sriyamevava.
Any person, whether man or woman, who worships me with loving devotion, offering his or her prescribed duties unto me without material attachment, is understood to be situated in goodness. So again, we are speaking here about prescribed duty. Duty means that we are acting according to injunctions of the scripture. It means that our devotional service has not yet come to the spontaneous platform. We are not spontaneously just attracted to Krishna. We haven't just come to the stage where we're so overwhelmed by ruchi, by taste in our devotional service, that the material energy looks bleak and that we naturally leave it behind. It means that we are still attached to sense gratification, to enjoying the senses. It means that we are still in the bodily concept of life. But acting according to prescribed duties is in the mode of goodness. And then whether one be man or woman is not a consideration. It is a matter of acting according to prescribed duties. So the roles of male and female in this world, and the particular qualities ascribed to to each of them are not fully relevant for those who take up spiritual life. Because as much as we rise above the bodily platform, as much as we actually act on the pure transcendental platform, we have nothing to do with these temporary bodily designations. At the same time, as much as we are still conditioned, we do have something to do with bodily conditioning. So we have to think about that. Anyway, the process of Krishna consciousness can lift anyone above the conditioned platform. In the Bhagavad Gita, we find that the Vaishyas, Triyas, Tathas, Sudras are described as those who have taken a lower birth, those who are influenced by material activity, which means everybody, everybody. Therefore, in this age, oftentimes we see that traditional Vedic models do not necessarily apply. In the Vedic context, men are meant to be in the higher modes of nature, and therefore they can act as a spiritual guide, whereas women, Vaishyas, Sudras may be more inclined towards the lower modes of nature, ignorance and passion. but in this age, everyone is controlled by the lower modes of material nature. And that's what we see all over the world. Whether it is Australia, or whether it is Bollywood, or whatever, wherever it may be, all the same influences. All of us are simply dependent on mercy. It is there where spiritual life really takes off, when we come to the point that we realize, I have no qualification. Kunti Devi says, Janmai Swarya Suti Sibir, E Damana Madapuman, Naivariti Abhidatum Vai, Tum Akinchana Gocharam. She is saying that we cannot be sincere as long as we take pride in our birth. It's very difficult, because everyone is taking pride in his birth. It was in the Bhaktivedanta manor that I received the order of sannyas from my spiritual master. And at that time, there was a TV crew present to film the whole thing, and they interviewed me afterwards. And they asked me, so, are you experiencing any change now that you have taken sannyas? Are you experiencing, is it any different? And I said, of course it's different. Just like in marriage, you can ask a man who just got married, are you feeling any different? And he will say, yes, because there is a sense of responsibility. There's a new responsibility. So taking sannyas, also a new responsibility. I said, and I also feel different in another way. I said, because, everyone in this world is thinking they have the best position. Is it like the president of the United States? He thinks he's the number one man in the world. I am the number one. That's what he thinks. I'm the most important man on the planet. That's what he thinks. And so at that time, when I took sannyas, I had just read that the president of the United States said his favorite snacks was pigskin chips. Pigskin chips. I never knew there were such things, but it was his favorite. So, and I was explaining to the TV crew that from the perspective of an Indian Brahmana, this American president was the most low-class person. It's like, and that a Brahmana, right, was by far more exalted than him. Thus all the Brahmanas in India are considering themselves superior to the number one man of the world. Right. He said, but the truth of the matter is, I told the press, he said, is actually now I have the best position. Yeah. As a sannyasi, it's the best material position you can get. Yeah. You can't get better. Because now all my time and all my energy is free for serving Krishna. That's what it's for. No more division of energy. No more Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. No more double roles in life. I'm going to work. Put the dress and off you go and play the role. Smile and so on. It's for money, boys. It's important. Keep on smiling. And then we come home. And again, we can return to what we really believe in being a devotee of Krishna. But sannyas, the best, because then we are free for Krishna. So, ultimately, everyone in this movement is meant to come to that point. That's what this movement is for. This movement is basically designed for the purpose that we just gradually come to the point. Everything for Krishna. Everything. Pranir artha diyava chasriyam acharanam sada. All our energy, all our possessions, all our intelligence, and all our words. In Bhagavad Gita, there is the famous verse, Versyatmika buddhir ekeha kulanandana. And this verse, 241, on this verse, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gave a commentary. And that commentary was so inspiring to Srila Prabhupada that it became like the practically his meditation throughout his life. And Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is describing, he says that my only purpose, ekeha, my only purpose is to serve the Supreme Lord and my spiritual master. I have no other purpose. It is both my sadhana, or that what I do in practice. I'm trying to practice it, this mood of being a dedicated servant of my spiritual master and of Krishna. And it's also my sadhya. It is also my goal that I become a fully dedicated servant of my spiritual master and of Krishna. And then Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur continues and says, and I'm always meditating on this, even in my dreams. Even in my dreams. So Prabhupada took that and he just said that when he read that purport, it struck him like a thunderbolt, and he just took it to heart. So that's very interesting. That mood, and that is the mood that can lift us to the transcendental platform. Nothing else. Transcendental means service. It means to give up our own ideas, to give up our own desires, to give up our own plans and to simply accept the plans, desires, ideas of Guru and Guranga. That is how it is. But that's not easy at all. Not easy at all. Usually what we're trying to do is we're trying to combine things. We're trying to use our intelligence to find the perfect solution, namely that we fulfill Guru's and Krishna's desire and our own at the same time. That's what we use our intelligence for. in devotional service. But that is not necessarily the best. Then we are looking for a comfortable position within the confines of Krishna consciousness. As long as it's within the regulative principles, then it's all right. As long as there are no forbidden ingredients on the label, then it's okay. Is it? It is. It's okay, but it's not okay. It's not like terribly good. It doesn't compare to the descriptions that we find of Mother Sachi cooking for Nimai. When it was described that Nimai had taken sannyas, and then Nityananda somehow or other brought Lord Chaitanya back to the house of Advaita Acharya. And then Mother Sachi cooked. She cooked for Nimai. She asked, she said, "I do all the cooking this week. Grant me this." Everyone agreed. And then she cooked. And the way she cooked like she had never cooked. And she knew it was the last time that she would cook for him. And that prasadam, that was of a caliber like no one had ever tasted such prasadam. And all the devotees were just like, in ecstasy. It's not the same as a packet of chips, you know, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, crunch, 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 prasadam. It's like, it's not quite the same. So, in this way, we are looking at quality in our service, real dedication in everything we do, and that means we can no longer just stay within what is authorized. We have to come to the point of trying to do the best we can for Krishna. Was it the phone or what was that? So that's Krishna consciousness. We cannot be satisfied. The nature of the conditioned soul is that we are easily satisfied. I'm following the four regulated principles. I'm chanting 16 rounds. I'm doing great. No, we know better. I'm doing terrible. I may follow the four regulated principles. I may chant 16 rounds, but I'm doing terrible, actually. In terms of quality, it's poor. It's poor. Poor quality. That we'll have to admit. Before we can improve, we'll have to admit that our poor performance, as long as you're thinking, "Oh, I'm doing great," then there's no need to change anything. I'm fine. Everything is wonderful.
Yeah.
No, it's not. I'm sorry to spoil the fun. But we can and must try to improve in our service. We must try to increase our absorption in hearing and chanting. Through this process of hearing and chanting, a desire in our heart may awaken. And this desire, a desire to serve Krishna, a desire to go back to Godhead, when such desires awaken in our heart, then everything else will fall away. So we must hear and chant and engage in devotional service. Then we can rise above. But it's not automatic. We don't have to make a big issue of what type of conditioning we have. We all have it. And really doesn't matter. My conditioning is better than your conditioning. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's all useless. Yeah, it's all useless. It's, you know, whatever chain you have, it's a chain. Yeah, it's a chain. My chain is better than your chain. it's really no good. I'm in a better mode of nature than you are. But all the modes of nature are simply dealing with the material energy, even goodness. Goodness may be about prescribed duty, and that is purifying, but it is not liberating. It will not set us free from material bondage. It will not bring us to love of God. One can get only bhakti through bhakti, not by anything else. One cannot get devotional service from the mode of goodness. One can be completely situated in the mode of goodness, but it will not bring us to bhakti. Of course, bhakti comes from bhakti. If one is situated in goodness, it may be easier to maintain bhakti. That's for sure. If we were totally in the mode of ignorance yesterday, taking any intoxicant on the block, and today we walk into the temple, it will be hard. Probably we will leave again. But some stayed, coming from exactly that. They stayed, and they just became completely purified, because it doesn't really matter at all. Therefore, we must see who is taking shelter. Who is really taking shelter? That is the criterion. So here's a whole series of verses describing the modes of material nature. And what is the relevance of the mode of goodness for a devotee? Since we are interested in transcendence, since we just established that bhakti comes from bhakti, so what is the relevance of the mode of goodness for us? Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes we experience that we are in a wonderful movement because everything is transcendental. Look, the deities are here, the spiritual world is here, transcendental. The holy name is here, transcendental. Prasadam is here, transcendental. Prabhupada present in his murti form, transcendental. Srimad Bhagavatam, transcendental, transcendental, transcendental. Everything is transcendental, except we. We are not transcendental. Huh? Have you noticed it also? Yes. Now what to do? So at least let's then be in the mode of goodness, and from there try to become transcendental. And sometimes maybe we have a transcendental moment that we actually really for a moment forget our own personal agenda and say, no, I'm doing it for Krishna now. Sometimes, just for a moment. So we have our little moments and that's it. Giriraj Das Brahmachari, that's before he took sannyas, once said to Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, sometimes I'm in Maya. Prabhupada said, what do you mean, sometimes? You're always in Maya. And that is interesting. Interesting for us also to kind of keep in mind and not to become proud and not to think, now I'm transcendental, but to keep on thinking, I'm trying to become transcendental. And actually, I'm still in Maya and I should be very careful. I'm very inclined towards Maya. Therefore, I must always be alert that Maya doesn't capture me. That kind of mood is required. One must be very diligent. Krishna bhaya mukahaya bhogaram shakara nikitasta maya tarajapatiyahaya. Srila Jagadananda Pandit in his Prema Vivarta is explaining the nature of Maya and is saying, Maya is always waiting, and when one is just slightly inclined towards sense gratification, then Maya is waiting there to slap us down, bang, out of nowhere, bang. Yes, so we must be careful. We must be careful to keep ourselves safe on the spiritual platform. And that begins with not being proud. That begins with realizing that we are all residents of the age of Kali. We all appeared in this age. The very fact that we appeared in this age means that we are poor in qualification. Only those. They have to understand that those who are qualified in the age of Satya Yuga, they go back to the spiritual world. Many. In the Satya Yuga, with a consciousness like we have now, they would not have even gotten human birth. With our current state of consciousness, we would all be animals in Satya Yuga. We'd be lucky if we'd be an animal. In Treta Yuga, the standard for the human form of life is lowered. The human form of life, then one is less qualified. People are less qualified. In the Kali Yuga, the standard for human life is so much lowered that even those who are practically animalistic by their conditioning are still getting a human form of life. That we have to understand. So maybe it sounds a little bit harsh what I'm saying, and some may feel that like, what is he doing this morning? Is he hammering us over the head? Maybe it's more a cold shower, kind of a wake up, right? Wake up from the stage, from the romantic view that we have about ourselves. A very kind of, I'm on the way back to Godhead, Vaishnava, Vaishnavi, and like that, thinking of ourselves, have a very idyllic, romantic view of how we are already spiritually advanced. So I'm trying to pop the bubbles or the balloons and just bring it down to brass tacks, which means to the reality, to the hard facts of life, that we are residents of the age of Kali. And that anybody who has taken his birth in this age of Kali means one who failed in previous yugas, right? Who didn't make it. We are the ones who didn't make it. The problem cases, what to do. Krishna has a few trouble cases who really don't make it. Alright, give him a chance in Kali Yuga. Right? At least give him a human form of life. Right? Of course, they have no qualification. So this is what's going on. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada describes the mode of goodness, and he says that he describes how there are people in different modes of nature. Right. Some are predominated by goodness, some predominated by passion, and so on. And then he says that we should associate with the mode of goodness. So I like that, because it's something practical I can do. See, if you tell me that I have to be in the mode of goodness, then I very passionately try to be in the mode of goodness, and it doesn't quite work, if you know what I mean. It's very difficult to be in the mode of goodness, That's the difficulty. Then, Dhammo tapo socham. So some of the qualities of the mode of goodness are mentioned. And sense control, austerity. So then I start to perform austerity to the extreme in the mode of passion and ignorance. So it's very difficult to be in the mode of goodness. And if they tell you have to be in the mode of goodness, yeah, I know I have to be in the mode of goodness, but I am not. And then what? I am what I am. But to associate with the mode of goodness, that's possible. And that's interesting. So when we start associating with the mode of goodness, it means that we make external arrangements of the mode of goodness as our basis in life. And that's how it is in spiritual life. We at least situate ourselves in the mode of goodness by associating with the mode of goodness, place in the mode of goodness, people in the mode of goodness, ways of behavior in the mode of goodness. And then, through that, we will develop the qualities of goodness by association. And that is interesting, I think. So the mode of goodness is the point where we return to. When we fail to be transcendental, when we fail to be ecstatic, when we fail to serve Krishna with love, when we cannot do it, then we serve Krishna out of duty. That's, of course, the lower platform, out of duty. It is something like, well, it's not really reflecting the condition of our heart. Our heart is impure, but out of duty, we still serve. Something like politeness. Why is there politeness in this world? I thought about this when I was a kid, because in my family, we were very polite. All the little kisses in the air and so on. And all that, I just thought, it's all hypocrisy. All hypocrisy. You saw someone coming to the house. Oh, how nice that you came. Here they are again. Do come in. Yes, they always come around dinner time. Yes. Oh yes, please, please, have a seat, yes. Would you like a drink? I'm sure you'd like a drink. Yes. And like this, hypocrisy, but all politeness, and the whole world's doing it, you know. Oh, how nice to see you again. Oh boy. Usually they take half an hour of your time, how to get rid of this person. Like that. It's full of hypocrisy, politeness. But it helps, because probably without it, we would strangle each other. So, I guess, better a little hypocrisy and politeness than no politeness at all, because God knows what would happen. Right? So, therefore we go, good morning, or haribo. So, nice, well-behaved. Being in the mode of goodness is also a little bit like that. There is a dichotomy, the internal experience. Even sinful desires may be there, may remain. Gross sinful desires may still be there. And now what to do? Should we feel very guilty when there are still sinful desires in our heart? Should we make that our daily meditation? Punish ourselves. I'm such a rascal. I'm so guilty. I have sinful desires. I'm so fallen. I'm such a rascal. Here I am as a devotee, and yet I still have these really low and degraded desires. Just see. And I'm hiding them, but I know the truth. And we just wallow in guilt. It's not really our main meditation. Sometimes, for a moment, we may reflect, I'm most sinful, most fallen. But Krishna consciousness is more practical. Krishna consciousness means that even that one sets limits for himself and says, whether I have sinful desires, or whether I don't. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yayetu purusham param. Whether I have such sinful desires or not, I'm going to engage in devotional service with full force. Or tivra. Tivra bhakti. Tivra is referring to the sun, to the rays of the sun. And it said, unadulterated, the full blast of the sun. Right? Full blast. So, in other words, the full blast of devotional service. Now, I'm not going to water it down. Whether I have sinful desires or not, I'm going for the pure process of devotional service. That's what the verse really means. Akama sarva kamava. So, that's the practical approach. Not just thinking, I'm so sinful, I'm so fallen, I'm such a rascal, I'm this, I'm that. No, what are we going to do about it? To put limits and say, whether I have a material desire or not, I'm not going to act upon it. Whether I have a sinful desire or not, I'm going to let it starve. I'm just going to let it starve. But how to do that and where to get the strength? Because there is the story that Srila Prabhupada tells about how to tame a tiger. Prabhupada knew everything, even how to tame tigers. So he was describing that you tame a tiger. Well, first they catch the tiger. That's another department. We will not discuss how you catch tigers. But anyway, you catch the tiger, have him in a cage, then you let him out in a bigger cage, and you let the tiger fast for a few days. So although tigers are very strong, even a tiger becomes weak in a serious fast. So after a few days, that tiger is walking in the cage. And then the trainer comes in with whip and boots and stool, and he just beats the tiger up, basically, you know, and puts the stool, whips him, kicks him with the boots, and tiger is like, first heavy fasting, and then you get a beating as well, totally depressed. So then, more fasting. And then after some days, when the tiger is totally weak, the trainer comes back again. And then the tiger thinks, oh no, not again. No way. And the tiger just goes into a corner in the cage. And finally, he offers obeisances to the trainer. Like, you are my master. Whatever you say, I will do. Prabhupada said, in that way, we must train our mind. Now I know that sounds a little... It sounds maybe okay with a tiger, but not okay with the mind. but still, that's what Prabhupada described. One must be strict with the mind, and one must control the mind. But that is still very difficult. A spiritual life is always about fighting. Fighting with the lower nature. And one gets tired of such a fight. You know. And over time, one just feels, I can't do it anymore. I just have to be more natural. I have to be, you know, just more honest about who I am. That is what happens over time. So spiritual life definitely should be more than just a fight, more than prescribed duty. If it's all about duty, how long can we engage in duty? We are weak because we're from the age of Kali. So nobody in the age of Kali likes the word duty. It's your duty. It's your duty. Don't rub it in. Duty. Heavy duty. We don't like this word duty. And someone who reminds us of our duty is not so popular. So this process of bhakti yoga is certainly not just a process of duty alone. It is a process based on taste, full of taste. There's immediately spontaneous attraction to Krishna. And the beauty of the deities is extraordinary. There is no doubt about it. The taste of prasadam, beautiful kirtans, or fired up flying kirtans. Kirtan is such a thing. So there are many things that are full of taste. And it is that Srila Prabhupada describes in his introduction to the Nectar of Devotion that everything moves by taste. We don't move on duty. It's like we would not have joined this movement if it was just about duty. Yeah. It is your duty to be a devotee. So therefore you must surrender. Yeah, sure. You know. I'll be back next week, you know. See you later. Yeah. It's not our what attracted us. There was taste. There was something that was just really amazing. And the material world was just frustrating and shallow. The material world is bringing its frustration. It is a byartata. Material energy brings us to the point of frustration. Because no matter what you have and what you do, still not happy. The old example of the Brahmana who was hungry, went begging, and even went begging from a Muslim. It meant that he would lose his caste at that time. And then the Muslim gave him something to eat, and it was not enough. It was only little. And then he ate it, and then he lamented. Lost my caste and still hungry. Yeah? So this is the nature. We lost our caste. We gave up our principles. We broke all the rules. We acted in sinful ways. Hidden. Hiding it from others. But we did. Simply because our desire for happiness was so strong. But in spite of breaking all the rules and doing these hidden sinful activities, still not happy. Lost our caste and still hungry. That is the case. We're still hungry. That is the problem. So, frustration comes then as a result. So frustration is inevitable. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that before one comes to the point of surrender in spiritual life, one must come to the point of admitting that he is a failure. One has to admit, I am a failure, actually. I have failed. Whatever I tried, I have failed in my life to be happy. I failed, actually. One has to come to admit this point, that I'm a failure. And then one can be ready to sort of look for shelter. And then there is shelter, because there is taste. There is lots of taste in Krishna consciousness. There is happiness. Prabhupada spoke once in a very optimistic way. Very optimistic view. He said, these devotees, they have the best of everything. They live in the best place. Marble floors, beautiful decoration, live in the best place. They eat the best food. They have the best dress. It even grows with you in size. Prabhupada didn't say that. I added that just now. They have the best dress, best association. And even if you want to get married, so they get like the best partner, because they get someone who has some principles. So everything best. Prabhupada said, when you take spiritual life, material happiness is rolling at your feet. Well, that's a very optimistic view. We don't all see it like that. We don't always. Sometimes we see it like, oh, I'm still here. It's a miracle. Kind of. That's also there. But it's partially because we are failing to appreciate what is there. I have the example of a feast that is being served and not served very nicely. and it's served Indian style. We're all sitting in rows, and the row that we sit in is the row that is forgotten. Puris! Hey! We didn't get the puris! Finally, you know, you got only rice, so you're sort of munching on the rice, but puris, puris, bring the puris. And then you get puris, but there's no cheese sabji. You forgot us again, you know, the cheese sabji, cheese sabji, munch on the dried puri. And in this way we go through the whole feast, each time thinking of the next preparation as the gulab jamun goes in the mountains, sweet rice, sweet rice. And you, at the end, you didn't taste a single prep. Didn't taste it, it just all swallowed it, but the attention wasn't there. So, we are living like that, very inattentive to all the nice things that are there. And then we get in a negative frame of mind. Oh God, everything is forbidden in Krishna consciousness. Oh no dear, I don't know if I can do it. It's too austere. I mean, really, is this me? I think Krishna consciousness is wonderful. I definitely accept that it is the truth. But is it me? Can I do it? I have no doubt in the philosophy, but I have doubt in myself. That's false reasoning. That's false logic. It means you have doubt in the philosophy. It's not that you have doubt in yourself. You have doubt in the philosophy because you think that this process is not powerful enough to change you. You see. Therefore you have no faith in the process. Because that's what this process is about. It can change us. Mundane calculations do not apply for a devotee. In this world, you calculate. How far can I jump? It's like we are from Holland. I always see someone from Holland and you know. Holland. In Holland we have a sport called slootje springen. Right? A slootje, what is a slootje? A slootje is a narrow canal, and there we have lots of them. Between fields there are canals, and you know, it's a big thing amongst kids to jump over them, you know. And some are like 1 meter, 1.5 meter, some are 2.5, some are even 3 meters wide. Now, 3 meters gets a serious jump. Didn't work. Yes, in this way, we are calculating. I know what I can do. No. The 3 meter one, forget it. No. I know I'm not going to make it. 2 meters I can do, but not the 3 meter one. And we calculate. I know my limitations. And this is life. We always calculate. I know myself. I know my limitations. I know what I can do. But all that changes. Because by devotional service, we attract the mercy of Krishna, and then Krishna empowers us. And then we can do things that we can't logically do. And isn't it happening already? 4 regulative principles. It was impossible. It was. I don't know if you remember, but I remember. It was impossible. It couldn't be done. Not possible. I sometimes wanted to quit smoking, but usually not longer than half an hour. Like that, it was impossible. It couldn't be done. And so many other things I wanted to quit. But they were very difficult to quit. So hard. And now, it becomes possible. Although sometimes a little difficult. But by this process, it becomes possible. How? Krishna is empowering us. So our own calculations do not apply in Krishna consciousness. We can do things. We can be greater than we think. We can be greater than we think. That is the nature of devotional service. We can be much greater than we think we can be. Because devotional service will carry us to heights that we could have never imagined. And that is how it works. And we'll be doing things for Krishna that we thought couldn't be done, and yet they can be done. The more we get absorbed in serving Him, in chanting His holy name, in hearing about Him, the more we do, the more things will expand. And then we can rise even above the mode of goodness. These three modes of material nature, they're mentioned in one breath: goodness, passion, and ignorance. But between them, there are huge distances. You know, the mode of ignorance is down there, passion, and the mode of goodness way up there. For most of us, we are looking at the most of mode of goodness as very much above us. Therefore, under the current conditions, we are taking shelter of Varna Ashram, which gives us clear prescribed duties. So it gives us a structure that we can hold on. Just like you see these old people walking with a rack. They go shopping, they have this rack, and they lean in the rack because they can't walk without. Sometimes you also see someone who's injured, who had an accident, walking with a rack. But such a person, once he gets better, you know, throw it away, goodbye. You know, there's been a time when I was on crutches, but one day I recovered from the car accident, and then just threw them away, and dancing again. So Varna Ashram is like that, a support structure at present, and it brings us to the mode of goodness. It gives us prescribed duty, and in that way it helps us. But unless it is offered to Krishna, it will never give us bhakti. So Varna Ashram is nice, but we must offer it all to Krishna. So therefore we have to give meaning to Varna and Ashram. Let's say Ashram for a moment. We have to make our Ashram meaningful. We have to make it a shelter. Ashram means shelter. We have to make it a shelter. Yes. So, if one is married, Grihastha Ashram, one has to make it a spiritual shelter. If one is a brahmachari, brahmacharini, make it a way of life which is full of reminders of Krishna. And we may as well go for some things that we like. Why not? If you put a picture of Krishna on your wall, it may as well be one that you really like. That helps. So let us develop and follow our taste. That is also part of spiritual life. Like that, one can gradually come to the spontaneous platform of devotional service, where we are actually so much attracted to Krishna that we really want to serve Him, really, from the heart. And that is where real bhakti begins, right, when it becomes spontaneous. So we're working on it. So to summarize once again, we are at least, because we are not transcendental, we're at least taking shelter of the mode of goodness, of prescribed duty. Varna Ashram gives us a structure. Vaidhi Bhakti, according to rules and regulations, give us prescribed duty, but we're trying to gradually appreciate Krishna. Therefore we have to keep our eyes open, not sleepwalk through spiritual life, but actually see how many nice things there are. Learn to appreciate. Bhakti Mark Swami told me he met one lady in Canada who was very depressed. And then he spoke with her and he said, so you are depressed, suffering a lot from depression. So then he asked, well, do you have a nice husband? She said, yes. Do you have nice children? Yes. Do you have a nice house? Yes. Do you have But anyways, 20 other nice things. And she said all the time, yes, yes, yes. So then finally, Maharaj said, count your blessings. Count your blessings. So that's a very good instruction. We should all count our blessings. Count them. Just look around. Count our blessings. Because we just forget all the blessings that we have. Let's count them. There's so many, actually. If we count our blessings, then you think, well, actually it's not so bad. Actually, it's quite good. We might even develop a positive mood, a positive attitude about spiritual life if we count our blessings. Because there are so many. In that way, with a positive attitude, being aware of our blessings, we very naturally will develop our taste in Krishna consciousness and very naturally will come to spontaneous devotional service. Thank you. Questions or comments? Yes.
Yeah, you've spoken to us about many things, about devotional service, about the Mars and all the other stuff. I wonder if you could just take us a little bit further and tell us a little bit about pure love for Krishna. Because if you're in pure love for Krishna, then all those other things automatically following behind, and love's not a thing that you can, I don't know how you inspire to that. You either love or you don't love.
Well, we find that there are three types of devotees described. The Kanista Adhikari, one who has weak faith, one who is not very fixed in his devotional service. Usually I give the example of the Kanista, who... there's a man, he was working on the roof, he's trying to fix the roof, and suddenly he slides down. But just as he gets to the edge, he grabs the edge of the roof and he's hanging on the roof. And he thinks, saved. But, you know, bellies are growing and muscles get weak. And he tried to pull himself up onto the roof. He couldn't do it. So he's hanging there and suddenly realizing, how long can I hang here? So I'm only temporarily saved, I'm going to die. So he starts praying, oh my God, please save me, please save me. Then, suddenly a voice behind him, need any help? Who are you? I'm God. Oh God, please save me. All right, I'll save you. Just let go of the roof and I will catch you. Can't you catch me first? And then I'll let go of the roof. So that's the Kanista. So that's why the Kanista is not making much advancement. The Madhyam Adhikari, the intermediate devotee, is ready to let go of the roof, let go of material securities, and just material desires, ignore them, and just have faith that if I just rely on Krishna, that I will be happy. Such a Madhyam Adhikari is described as Ishvarata Dadine Su. Bali says it is Satsuja, Prema Maiti Kripopetsi, Yag Karuti Samajama. It is said that he has different relationships with different people, or different personalities, I should say, rather. Ishvara. For Ishvara, he has Prema. For the devotees, he has Maitri, friendship, Tadadine Suda. For the innocent, there is mercy, kripa. And for the envious, dvisatsu, for the envious, there is nirapeksha, indifference. So he has different relationships like that. So it's interesting that the Madhyam Adhikari, it is described that he has prem for Ishvara. So it may not be the same level of prem as the Uttama Adhikari. Uttama means who is beyond tamas. He is beyond the influence of the material energy. He is really absorbed in transcendence. But it says that the Madhyam, the intermediate devotee, already has that prem. And the same word prem is used Although obviously the praying is of another quality on the Uttama Adhikari level. But it is of the same nature. And that is the interesting part where I want to begin. That praying must grow. It is a gradual growing process, this love of God. And it comes by giving. Love means giving. To give. To be very... Giving means to be generous. We have to be generous. Generous with all that we have. And in the end, generous with ourselves. When you've given... So, when we, in great generosity, give ourselves without calculating. But can I really do this? Can I afford this? Is it really... In life, we are very careful, you know, like, well, can you help? Yeah, well, let me see. Well, you know, I'd like to, but, yeah, calculating. But no, we give, not calculating, just pour the heart in there and do it. And just say, Krishna will make it possible, somehow or other. He'll help. I'll do it. I'll take the risk for him. Yeah, I'll do the... And then... It just starts happening and more becomes possible and one gives more and more. And in this way, gradually, one's love is developing and growing and growing until one gives all his time for Krishna. Not just 16 rounds, ping, done, like a microwave, you know, that's like sort of... complete. No. Satsarupa Maharaj once wrote, he said that I really start chanting only after I finish 16 rounds. Which I thought is nice. I like that. So, to not be miserly about our chanting, to not be miserly about hearing, and then by giving and giving our energy, our attention, everything for Krishna, that love will develop. Then it will come.
Maharaj, you very beautifully explain how to train a tiger, but how to catch it?
How to catch the tiger? Well, I think in our metaphor, the tiger was the mind. And so you're really asking how to catch the mind. And how to catch the mind is by taking shelter of parampara. There is no other way that we can catch this mind. So it is, as long as we are trying to deal with the mind on our own, we'll never make it. But if we take shelter of parampara, then the mind will be dealt with. And that's it. We must always take shelter of our acharyas, of the authorized, bona fide process. Then it will happen. That tiger will be caught sooner or later. Yes?
Nectar of instruction in the beginning pages, Srila Prabhupada writes, advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the follower. So, like, how crucial is that attitude in all our devotional practices? Because we could be, you know, because in chanting offenses we say many, many words of even chanting, we may not get love of God if we have an inappropriate attitude. So, how crucial is that attitude in our daily practices in this very short Kali Yuga lifespan?
In the nectar of devotion, it is said that the fundamental attitude of bhakti is dasyam. Dasyam. It begins there, in thinking we are the servant. And we must become deeply rooted in that identity and always, in every relationship, have to remember, I'm the servant. So when we speak to a devotee, I'm the servant of this devotee. I'm the servant of the Lord. I'm the servant of Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm the servant of the Holy Name. I am the servant. It is that which is the fundamental attitude. And we build on that attitude. And then from there, everything can develop. You mentioned Bhavana Jamanadi Kari Shravana Kirtanam, or you mentioned this point that even after many, many births, one can still not attain love of God if one is committing offenses in the holy name. Offenses are committed when we don't develop this mood of dasyam, of being the servant. When we are attached to being master. When we think, when I'm better than him, or when we desire to be better than someone else, then this envy will bring us to offending Vaishnavas. Neglecting them is one way of offending. The first, we see, there's the first degree of offense is neglect. The second degree of offense is where we actively become insulting. And then the third degree of offense is where we actually become violent. So all these things will come when we don't have this service attitude. So the key is dasyam, and we have to practice this. Remind ourselves a million times, I'm a servant. No. When I was a new devotee, I was first in Vrindavan, and then after some months I had to go, came back to Amsterdam and stayed there. And then I had a hard time in the Amsterdam temple. It wasn't easy. First of all, I had been sick. I had had severe jaundice and I couldn't eat anything. Everything was just dripping in ghee, you know, a typical Hare Krishna temple, and everything fried. And I was fried because I couldn't eat. It's really tough, you know. So there was this one devotee. He said, I'll cook something for you. And because he was anyway cooking, so he cooked something for me. And then he would cook, and then it was kept aside for me. And then there was a note. It said, okay, the prasadam is there and there. Your dog servant. He would sign these notes with your dog servant. And that was just shocking to me. How can any human being call himself your dog servant? But that your dog servant. Are you ready to be a dog servant? Are you ready for that? Not just the servant of the Vaishnavas, but to be the dog servant of the Vaishnavas. Think about that over breakfast. Yeah.
What is the Krishna conscious way of overcoming guilt?
Of our coming what?
Guilt.
Overcoming guilt.
As simple as getting an Ekadashi fasting and worshiping versus killing
a
Brahmana.
Mm-hmm. Well, some guilt has a healthy side to it. It is like pain. Yeah? When the leg begins to pain, then there's a warning that it might just fall off if you keep on walking on it, so stop walking. So pain has a function. Guilt has a function. So we can see that within guilt, the super soul is also communicating to us. But then we can take that guilt and we can just make it a form of lamentation. Oh, I'm so fallen. But that's not good enough. What are we doing about it? It's one thing to say, I'm so fallen, and then turn around and stop being fallen and work on it to rise above it. That's healthy, and that's a healthy level of guilt. Only when you go in, it says in the scripture, not when you go out. So a healthy level of guilt is there to remind us these things are wrong, don't do them again, but now better my life, and then one will rise above. One will rise above these sinful activities. But just dwelling in feelings of guilt without taking up a path of improvement is just mundane lamentation, not beneficial. Just wallowing in self-pity.
Apart from personally asking the spiritual master, apart from that, how would we know if our service is of a high quality or low quality?
We have all our spiritual masters in the form of the Vaishnavas. So the Vaishnavas are giving us devotional service. And the Vaishnavas come to us in parampara. Not only that, the parampara are the 32 names that are listed coming from Krishna down to Srila Prabhupada in the opening pages of the Bhagavad Gita. We have that whole list: Krishna, Brahma, Narada, Vyasa, and then coming down to Prabhupada. No, there's parampara everywhere. There's parampara in the kitchen. There's parampara in the temple room. You know, there's parampara on the altar. There are experienced devotees who are guiding others. Right? It's like here, you know, Kurma, he absorbed certain standards when Australia was still a yatra in development, from scriptures and from other senior devotees. And then Kurma, he sort of set the standard for the yatra. Right? And even up to the day of today in Melbourne, the parampara from Kurma is still alive. Yeah? In the kitchen, on the altar, everywhere. It's like... So such parampara is there. Yeah? And there are many things that Srila Prabhupada said about how to do things that were not always in the lectures, but that were referring to practical things. And such standards were carried forward, yeah, from one generation to another. So we take direction from the senior devotees. It means we must be a servant of the senior devotees. And if they say, this is how you do it, then that's how we do it. It's not that we think, well, I have my own idea of how I'm going to serve Krishna. No. We have to just do it according to the direction of the senior Vaishnavas. And then as we grow, gradually the senior Vaishnavas and our spiritual master give us more independence. Just like I say, when you surrender to the spiritual master, especially at the time of initiation, then you are fully offering yourself to the spiritual master, and from that day, you and everything you have becomes the property of the spiritual master. Everything. 100%. But of course, you know, then the spiritual master, if he has to deal with all of that, right, with all that property and all these things, that's too much headache. So he puts it back under our care. He said, yes, it's mine, but you take care of it nicely on my behalf. And in this way, he gives back independence to us. And independence to disciples. And as he sees that we use the independence nicely, he may give us more and more independence to act in the service of Krishna. And then with our own intelligence, we can understand what is the high standard for Krishna. But at first, all independence we offer. And he decides how much he gives back. Some people he'll never give back very much. He keep them very tight. Others he'll give more. That's up to the spiritual master. Okay, thank you so much. Continue later. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.